This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lynn, Julian and Shaoning. It's 7:38 in the morning, and in about half an hour, we're going to be having the Breakfast Grill, where Shaoning, you speak with Dr. Nurul Amin Mohamed Ishak. He's Managing Director of Qualitas Medical Group.
Yeah, this group, which was founded in 1997, actually changed the way that general practitioners practice in Malaysia by corporatizing what were mostly self-proprietorships. So I'll be speaking to its founder and Managing Director, Dr. Nurul Amin, to discuss their plans for growth and also sentiments of the medical industry going forward.
Now, that's going to be happening after the 8 o'clock news, so be sure to stay tuned. Now, on the international front, according to HSBC research, the escalation in trade tensions between the US and China is further weighing on exports across Asia amid an already wobbly global demand. So in their latest Asian Economics Quarterly Report, HSBC noted that lingering uncertainties and risk that further tariffs and other trade restrictions might be imposed would restrain shipments through the remainder of 2019, if not beyond.
And HSBC actually believes that ultimately everybody will suffer in this trade tension, and even policy easing may not turn out to be the most potent this time than in the past.
Yeah, this is very much driven by the fact that leverage is already very high in certain places. After all, we've had almost a decade, if not more than a decade, of ultra low rates, and this leverage actually has elevated global policy uncertainty. So HSBC notes that despite the ongoing uncertainty, they do, however, have a silver lining in this very dark cloud that says that growth hasn't fizzled out entirely, especially in China, as they expect GDP above 6% to continue until 2020, which will be cushioned more by spending, especially on the infrastructure space.
So for more on this, we have on the line one of the authors of the report at HSBC, Frederick Newman, co-head of Asian Economics Research. Thank you for joining us, Frederick. Now, HSBC believes China can deliver above 6% growth per annum until 2020, which is no small feat. I mean, considering the trade war tensions, while leverage has been built up, where will this growth come from?
Well, one area where this is coming from is, again, from infrastructure spending. This had actually collapsed last year, and there's now policies in train to revive infrastructure spending, at least in the near term, to sort of add a floor under growth. And in addition to that, you're also going to see probably more in terms of tax cuts and support for small and medium-sized companies to invest, to hire more people. So it's very much an investment-geared support program, both on the infrastructure side as well as investment for small and medium-sized enterprises.
And you also mentioned in your report that policy easing or monetary easing would not be able to pump up the economies because of the trade tensions. Can you elaborate on this a little bit more?
I think a lot of investors and companies are hoping that the Fed rate cuts will sort of re-energize growth. But there's sort of two challenges here. The first one is, if you still have heightened uncertainty because of trade tensions, companies are less likely to invest because they're looking for clarity on trade. So even lower funding costs are not necessarily going to lead to the surge in investment until the uncertainty clears. And the second one has to do with very high debt levels in many economies, whereby if you already have a lot of debt, and even if interest rates fall, you may be less likely to take out even more debt. So we call this a debt brake. That is, when you have a lot of debt already, rate cuts tend to be often less effective in spurring another round of credit growth than economies where you have much lower leverage.
And will ASEAN economies actually have enough cushion and resilience should the US-China trade war escalate further?
Well, ASEAN is actually a sort of a region of remarkable resilience in all of this. Now, you would think that ASEAN, because it's highly trade-dependent, would suffer even more. But actually, what we find is in many local economies, there's a lot of sort of domestic demand support that's coming through. So in Malaysia, for example, domestic economy is still doing reasonably well at the moment. In Indonesia and the Philippines, growth is also very strong domestically. The other thing for ASEAN really is that ASEAN is sort of coming into its own again, and that is that it is very competitive on the world stage. It's starting to absorb new industries, export industries, so foreign direct investment is very strong in ASEAN. And Malaysia is a good case in point here, which is sort of seeing new industries come in, exports doing rather well. And that's despite all the trade tensions that sort of plague the global economy.
But Frederick, as you mentioned that ASEAN economies are competitive on the global stage, but how big of a factor, in your view, has the U.S.-China trade war been in limiting the growth of ASEAN economies?
Well, it's still capping growth. So on average, the U.S.-China trade tensions probably reduced GDP growth in Asia for each economy by 0.3 percentage points. It's sort of a regional average, a good benchmark to use. So there's certainly a fallout here. It's the uncertainty. It's lower growth in China and the U.S. that's prompting this. Europe also looks weaker, partly as a result of the U.S.-China trade tensions. But having said that, it is still an outperformer regionally. So ASEAN has seen a slight reduction in growth, but really all considered, we would look at ASEAN as being sort of an island of resilience in a global economy that's really challenged by a lot of headwinds.
Thank you so much for your comments, Frederick. That was Frederick Newman, a co-head of Asian Economics Research at HSBC, giving his thoughts on how US and China have affected ASEAN economies.
Yeah, it's actually interesting to note that the substitution effect is really starting to have a positive, although we do have detractors because we've had other guests who say that the substitution effect may only go so far. So I guess for some of these industries, it does take quite a while for them to start. I mean, let's say you're talking about a technology factory. It's not going to open overnight. Well, some of the industries like clothing, manufacturing or sportswear, that's much faster. But for sure, this trade war has only accelerated moves for companies to diversify their manufacturing bases, right? Because I think, if I'm not wrong, Nintendo will be making some of their game sets for the first time outside China and moving it to Vietnam. So that's a classic example where ASEAN benefits.
We also do have some other stories on the international front, particularly in the technology sector. IBM has sealed a $34 billion deal to acquire software company Red Hat Inc. as part of a strategy to ramp up their cloud computing business. And this is IBM's biggest acquisition to date.
Yeah, Red Hat specializes in the Linux operating system, which is a free open source system, but they do make money from selling subscription for support, training, integration services, and so on. So for them to achieve a $34 billion sale price for a free sort of platform is pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yes, and it's IBM has actually been working with Red Hat for years, and this acquisition will be an essential part of their digital transformation plan, because many companies already utilize both IBM and Red Hat systems in their current business, such as the likes of Morgan Stanley and Delta Airlines. Now, this will be critical for IBM because they will then be offering the next generation hybrid multi-cloud platform that is going to be based on open source technology. And it's important because it will provide a system that is interoperable with other cloud providers such as Amazon Web Services, Microsoft, and even Alphabet's Google, rather than compete with them head on.
Yeah, so cloud computing, I think, is the in thing right now. Everybody is putting the files onto the cloud. And if you look at Microsoft Azure, which is a cloud service that Microsoft has had, Red Hat actually has a 40% market share there. You know, even though Microsoft Windows as an operating system has a huge market share in the world to the tune of about one-third, I think, of 35%. Windows has a 35% market share of operating systems around the world, whereas Android is 40%, which is the lion's share.
Just looking at IBM as well, because their cloud revenue as a percentage of their total revenue also grew sixfold, so that to 25% since 2013. So that just illustrates really how much they are shifting towards cloud, because they're seeing the money come in. In the 12 months through the first quarter of 2019, cloud revenue exceeded $19 billion. And Red Hat is expected to contribute about 2 points of compound annual revenue growth over a five-year period. Now, the acquisition has also won approval from U.S. regulators, so that was in May, as well as European Union regulators in late June. So they've agreed to pay 100 $190 a share for Red Hat. So that's a 63% premium.
Now, this is very critical for IBM because it's a very old school technology name, right? It's been around for a long time. And we did see actually share price come under pressure in the past because there was a question of whether they remain still relevant in today's technology. So they started embarking on this cloud transformation program. But this space is actually really, really tough. It's not an easy space because you have the like of Google in there, you have Amazon, and now you even have some of the Chinese players in there. So it's really trying, IBM really trying to be the third or maybe the second largest player in this space.
And also, I think it's not about peddling software anymore. It's really about becoming a platform, becoming a service. For example, Microsoft is a software as a service company, infrastructure as a service, very much along the lines of Uber and Grab being transportation as a service, right? No longer buying and selling cars.
Basically, the cloud is the future, and it's going to be interesting to see how these existing tech companies adapt to it. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.